So what happens? Everybody wants it, right? People are lining up in order to get a drink here. Okay, now what, right? People are lining up, queuing. People are not going to be happy with our service. And that's not the only problem we might have if we get successful in our bar. We might miss orders. We might have issues. You know, we might forget an order or something. So people are going to get angry if we don't do things right. Now, how would you solve something like this? Would you throw a little bit more manpower into the issue, right? Try and solve it that way? Well, I don't know. I think in order to solve this really well, what you really need is, well, something completely different. And that's actually what this presentation is going to be about. Of course, we're not going to talk about really mixing drinks and stuff. We're going to see, okay, well, how are you going to make it easier to build high-quality distributed applications on top of Azure? And I'd like to do that using a system called N-Service Bus. So this is the agenda for today. First, I'm going to talk a little bit about distributed application development. Then I'm going to introduce N-Service Bus to you. And just because everybody loves slides, I'm just going to dive into code and just a little bit more code. Okay. Now, I have one request. If you have questions, feel free to fire away immediately. If you have a really good question, I have a stack of books that the people from N-Service Bus gave me, so I can hand them out to people who ask good questions. And while I'm coding, if I make an error, you know, if you're a background compiler for me, please yell out, and that's also good for a book. So thank you. So let's talk a little bit about distributed software development. And again, with a little bit of an example, and it would be nice if my mouse detects this. That would have been too nice. Okay. So let's think about building a website, right? And a website to serve the hypothetical bar that we were talking about. So what might happen is that the client who sits behind a computer says, I want a drink. And you know, the server says, okay, sure, no problem. I'll mix you up something, you know, looks in the database, see what we have, do all the work that needs to be done, and comes back saying, hey, here, nice drink for you. Go ahead. Now, why did I call this a little bit naive? Well, things go wrong, right? In the real world, things go wrong at some point in time. So if you think about it, if the server says, or if the user says, I want a drink, there's lots of things that could go wrong, right? The database could be down for a little bit while. The connections might break. Anything might happen that could cause issues. And the problem is, especially when you're talking about things that you don't want to go wrong, like losing orders or business critical things, you don't want to lose this information. Now, quite a while ago, this person called Peter L. Peter Deutsch came up with a bunch of fallacies on software distributed software development. And I kind of like this list, and it's the people at N-Service Bus really took this list at heart. Because what this list says, it's the network is reliable, for example. Well, we all know that a network is not reliable, especially when you're looking in a Windows Azure environment. I don't know if you, how many people here are running applications in Windows Azure? Okay, so it's a couple. You've probably all ran into issues where the connection just dropped for a very short period of time when you're trying to connect to table storage or anything. No? Well, yeah. They call it transient errors. And there's actually an application block from Microsoft, the transient error application handling application block, which will try to circumvent these tiny little glitches. Now, I always try to imagine myself if there's somebody sitting in an Azure data center and just says, well, this server needs to go over there. I'll just plug it out and plug it in there. And for a very short period, you'll have an issue. And that might be, you know, a lost order or a lost, you know, invoice going out to somebody. And there's a lot of these other illusions that you might have. The one that I always like is there's only one administrator. Well, that never happens, right? It's especially nice if you have an administrator that administers a Linux environment and a Windows environment, and they don't really talk well to each other. Well, you'll have different policies, different network restrictions. And you don't run into these issues while developing, because on your own developer machine, you're an admin, you control everything, and everything always works. So these, I really like thinking about these fallacies as well when I'm building my software. Now, when it comes to Azure, they've thought about a lot of these things to try and help a little bit, right? If you think about it, if the load on your system becomes a bit too high, you can easily scale your applications up and down. That's really simple. If you want to do some background processing, they have these worker roles that you can easily enable. It's really handy. And there's all these queuing infrastructure that Windows Azure has in place to make it really easy to build this. But I'm saying really easy, but actually, it's still quite a lot of work. If you think about it, what do you need to do to really reliably build something on Windows Azure? Well, you have to think about a lot of concerns. Okay, I want to send a message from one part of the system to another. They'll have to be serialized. They'll have to be routed. You'll have to manage your queues. Which queues am I using? Where are they going to? There's monitoring. There's auditing. Transactions, workflow. There's all kinds of these concerns that Windows Azure doesn't provide for you. So from my perspective, Windows Azure is a really good platform to build stuff on. And with Azure Storage and Azure Service Bus, you get a really powerful transport channel to be able to do all kinds of interesting things. But Windows Azure itself really doesn't help you that much with building really good distributed applications from a developer point of view. So that's what InService Bus is for me. It makes me feel the super powerful nerd, right? I mean, it helps me to build applications a lot faster. So what does it do for you? Well, I really look at it as being a productivity suite. It will help you to do message addressing and routing. So if you want to send a message from one part of the system to another part of the system, it will help you to get the message there. It will help you with testing, automatic, publish, subscribe, a whole bunch of things. Auditing is a really important one, right? If you want to make sure that which messages have gone to the system. Retries. Now, Azure Service Bus does do a little bit of work with regards to retries and error queue handling and those kind of things. And Service Bus, and we'll see that in a demo, has really handy first and second level retries. So it will help you make sure that you don't choke on poisoned messages and stuff. For workflows, there's sagas. Now, who's familiar with the term sagas? I see one hand going up, two. So a saga is a workflow, a business workflow that you can model in code, and it's a really simple way to do that in Service Bus, and also to handle concurrency issues that you might get there. And lastly, one of the things which I really like is that it will help you to do some shared hosting on Azure, because in Azure, if you spin up a work role, that won't cost money, and if you dedicate a worker role to handling one type of message, and you have many types of messages in your system, well, you'll have to spin up a lot of worker roles in order to get that to work. Ideally, you'd like to have an option to distribute the load across many worker roles. Well, that's one thing that Service Bus also does for you. Now, Service Bus is open source, which is really nice. Every time that I've worked with Service Bus, I wanted to look into the source code, see how it does things. And in some cases, I needed to tweak a little bit. So I had to change or plug in some things. Now, it's hosted on GitHub, so you can just clone the repository, look at it, do whatever you want with it. There's an active community on Google Groups. However, it's not free, right? So that's always a distinction with open source code. In this case, you do have to pay a licensing model. There's a $500 per core licensing model. Or it's a little bit hidden option, but especially for Azure, it's really nice that you don't have to do core counting. There's also a per developer licensing model. Now, what I really like about Service Bus as well is that it's based on abstractions. Now, I don't know if you know this quote. It's from somebody famous. Can't really remember who it was. But every problem in software development can be solved by one extra level of abstraction. Don't think it was Abraham Lincoln, by the way, but it was somebody famous. But anyway, Service Bus is built upon abstractions. And that really makes it easy to choose your own queuing mechanism, for example. Right? You can choose MSMQ, which it was originally designed for, RabbitMQ, Azure, there's a couple of other queuing implementations that you could pick if you wanted to. You can pick what storage technology you want to use. In Azure, it kind of makes sense to either choose SQL Azure or Azure Storage. But if you want to use RavenDB, which comes out of the box and actually is included in the license fee, or just regular SQL Server or another storage technology, you can. For dependency injection, there's all kinds of libraries that it uses and that that you can choose. You can choose Ninject, AutoFac, Unity. Who here uses dependency injection in there? A lot of people. Excellent. Well, really nice, because One of the best developer techniques in the world. And message serialization. Oh, you can pick. Well, how do you want to serialize your messages? Do you want to, you know, minimize file size? Use the binary. Do you want to do interoperability? Use JSON or XML. I mean, you can pick and choose, and it's very, very simple to implement. But yeah, you can hear me talk about, okay, well, how nice is it? How nice does it work? But I always like to see it and see it in action. So let's look at some code. And again, if you have questions or anything, feel free to interject and stop me. Do I have a mouse here? Okay, so I'm going to start up a little demo application. And what the goal of this demo application is going to be, if I start it up here, is I want to build a website where we could host a bar. So somebody comes around to your table, asks, what would you like to drink? You have to fill it in. And then somebody in the back end, preferably in the kitchen, we'll have to prepare the orders and make sure that once the orders are ready. Oh, and you guys can't see what I'm seeing. In that case, let me. Yeah, well, you're. Well, that's good. And use. Oh, I duplicated my screen. That's handy. Actually, it's not bad, but then I'll have to look over there to see what I'm actually presenting. No, that's not handy. Let me do this. Duplicate. Right, now we can all see the same thing, which is a lot fairer. Okay, so, and please don't mind my beautiful designs. This is a website where somebody could go in, create an order. For example, I would like one hangover cure, one separation of concerns in a techno sunrise, and this one without ice. And it comes up to a total of 44 euros, and I place the order, and it should place the order and hopefully start a processing on the back end. But to be honest, I haven't implemented the processing on the back end yet, so let's do that right now. Now, on the front end of this, this is nothing more than a regular web application using SignalR and Angular. So I can just very briefly show you a little bit. There is under scripts, we have a controller here, and the controller, whenever you press the create order button right here, it will call a method. And where is the place order? It will put the order on a list and also send a message to the server to indicate. Can you guys read it, by the way, in the end? I'll probably have to zoom in a little bit. Is it readable in the back? No? Well, then let me go to tools options. Links somewhere. Yeah. Oh, there. Okay. This is better, right? Yeah, I am Dutch. I just prefer to speak in English when I'm presenting for some weird reason. Anyway, so this is the method that will get called in the client. Is it better now, by the way, in the back? Yes? Okay, great. So this is the method that gets called in JavaScript, and it will call SignalR to place an order in the server, but we haven't implemented it, actually. So there's the livery hub on the server. This is where the method will end up, and this is where we'll have to start our journey to implement the whole kitchen. And it's again, so let me do the, because if I change the font here, it should, well, or I can just change the resolution. That would have been much easier if I would have done this beforehand. So I hope this is better in the back. Great. Okay. So what are we going to do? First of all, what happens here is that the client sends a message over to the server. And what do we want to do? Well, in this method, I could go in and add a record to the database saying, hey, I've received this order and I'm going to process it further. But what might happen if the database is down for a second? Or if my call from client to server fails somehow? We lose the order, right? And losing an order in a restaurant typically means an angry customer. And we don't want angry customers here, right? So what are we going to do? Well, I would like to send that message to a backend for further processing, and maybe also asynchronous processing. So how would you do that? Well, first of all, we have a method, and I think I also already have it here, the place order message. If we go in there, place order, it's right now this class sits within my web application. And that's kind of a problem if this class sits in a web application, if I want to do communication between different applications. So let's move it towards a shared message library. And the nice thing about having these classes in a shared message library, oh, and it's debugging, so I can't edit. The nice thing about having it there is, in a shared messages library, that you can treat this as a contracts assembly. So I'm going to add it here. New class. Okay. So this contracts assembly will be shared by various parts of my application, right? The backend processing, the frontend, websites, anything. You could also use WSDL or XSDs or anything to define your messages. I just like to use classes, which is a lot easier to work with. But one thing I haven't done yet is I haven't told... place orders... the class already exists. Let's just leave it, call this class one. So one thing I haven't done yet is told End Service Bus, this is actually a message that you can work with. It's a command in this case. Go and place this order. Now, I could do two things. I could say, well, implement an interface on top of this, which is called the I command. Well, I haven't even referenced the DLLs here yet, so it's now looking in the wrong place. But there is a downside with referencing a file directly, or a library directly, because then I'm tying my messages assembly to a specific version of End Service Bus. And if you want to do that, well, that's fine. But this also means that if you want to update your versions of End Service Bus, you'll probably need to update your client and your server at the same time. So End Service Bus does have a nice thing about this, which is called unobtrusive message conventions. And let me just copy and paste this in to a place where we have it. Well, I typically put this in some kind of shared location. So let's do that. And unobtrusive message conventions. This is okay. What you see here is I'm telling End Service Bus any class that you find within the namespace that starts with techbar and ends with commands, in this case, is a command. And anything that ends with events is an event, and I'll talk about what a command and an event is a little bit later. But this way, you can decouple your contracts from the actual usages of, okay, well, what is it? There's another thing, but I'll have time to mention this as well, that you can also define which properties are encrypted. And you have a lot of options to define, okay, well, what's the file, what's the class, what's the assembly that you want to be a message or a command. All right. So now I've defined a message that I could send towards the server. So let's do that. Okay. Now before I can do that, I will actually need to configure End Service Bus. And configuring End Service Bus in your web application basically means that I will have to have the bus implementation ready at startup. So let's do that. Let me copy and paste in this code. Now, I mentioned before, I really like dependency injection, but just for simplicity reasons, I'm not using it here. So basically, what I'm doing here now in the global ASAX is as soon as the application starts, I'm going to set up End Service Bus. So what does that mean? Well, I'm disabling Timeout Manager. I'll talk about that in a minute, what it is. But this line of code completely configures the End Service Bus to do what it needs to do. And what I'm saying is use your default dependency injection container. To be honest, I'm not even very sure what it is because I typically just use Unity. What kind of logging library would you like to use? Well, in Azure, it's really handy to use trace logging because there's just handy functionality to get your trace messages into Azure Table Storage. But you could use different loggings like, what's that? Log4Net and those kind of things. So what kind of transport channel would you like to use? Well, in this case, just because it's much easier to work with on a local development environment, I'm using Azure Storage Queues, because in your Azure local development environment, you have an Azure a storage queue environment. You could also use Azure Service Bus here just by replacing this and having a slightly different connection string. Well, what am I going to do for subscription storages? And I'll talk about that when we're actually talking about publish-subscribe. The unicast bus is typically the only bus type that they really support, but you have to call it anyway. The only really thing that's interesting here is something that you wouldn't likely want to do in an Azure application. It's purge on startup, which basically means whenever you start up the application, clean out your queues. This is really handy for a demo, but I wouldn't recommend doing this in a production environment. Unless, if you have a smart client, and that smart client is connected, and only when it's connected are you interested in messages, and when it's not connected, you're not interested in messages, you could do something where you have a specific queue for that particular smart client, and only when it starts up, you say, well, anything that's in the queue, just get rid of it, and from now on, I will start reading it. There are reasons why you want to use it, but typically in Azure, you don't use that much. All right. So if I start this up now, the public static iBus property gets filled. And with this iBus, I can start sending messages. So let's do that. One thing I forgot. You also need configuration sections. Now, these configuration sections, they're not that well documented, I found. But especially when it comes to how to use them in Azure, because, I don't need any connection strings. So when it comes to working in Azure, there's multiple places where you can store configuration information, right? If this is just a regular website that I'm publishing, you can put your configuration information in the web.config. You can also do it in code, by the way. You can just create these things and put them in code. But if you are storing these settings and you want to use them for in a Azure web role or worker role, well, then you also have the option to put your settings in the website in the worker role. I don't know if you've seen that, but you can here under roles. You also have the option to do key value pair settings. Now, the nice thing is you can also configure and service bus here using these settings if you want to. I typically try and avoid it because I don't really like these settings, but that's just me. Okay, so I've configured and service bus. And what it will do now is it will be able to start sending messages to this connection string, right? And this connection string right now just points to my local storage account, but you could point it to another storage account. Now, what I haven't done here yet is determine, okay, well, I'm sending a message, which I'm going to do right now, but where's the message going? Well, first let's send the message. If you remember, we had to do that in the delivery hub, right? This was where my website was calling and where it would my browser was calling and where it would send the messages to. So what I'm saying here basically, that was a nice character. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to set the order place day time and then I'm going to call bus.send and send the order. So now it's going somewhere, but where is it going? Well, that's one of the things which EnServiceBus will help you with, because the sender doesn't necessarily need to worry itself that much, or the code for the sender doesn't need to worry itself that much where it's going. You want to have a central place where you define, okay, well, what is the routing and where are my messages going? And this would be very different from using just, you know, plain Azure, because there you have to explicitly create a queue, put a message on top of that queue, and have it reader listening to that same queue. So in that sense, your sender and your receiver are kind of tied together because they both need to know the queues. Well, here you just say, I'm putting a message on a bus and I will see where it ends up. So let's see. Now, how do you define your routing? Well, you can do that in a config file, but in this case, I kind of prefer putting this not in a config file, but in a separate class. So what's happening here is that, and let me just type through it, is here, using this line, I am creating the configuration section in code. So this is exactly the same as having that same configuration section in the web.config. Only now, since this is in a shared library that's used by all my applications share the same routing scheme. Or as I'm saying applications, I meant all my assemblies are using the same routing scheme, which is nice. Now you might wonder, well, don't you have to tell nService Bus to find this? Well, no. nService Bus, oh, please.
When you don't have the configuration place.
Yes.
If my message is lost or stored somewhere,
it will throw an exception, saying object reference not set. But it will throw an exception immediately, and there's a book for you. And thank you for the nice question. Anyway, so where were we? Oh, yeah. So routing. So what are we saying here with regards to routing? Okay, this message, the place order message from the assembly, and I just wanted to have one place where I define the assembly, where does it go? Well, it will go to an endpoint. Okay, well, that's a new concept, endpoint. What is an endpoint? In nService Bus, you send messages to an endpoint, and an endpoint kind of relates to a queue. So this actually relates to the name of a queue, but it also relates to a process that will create this queue, who's responsible for the queue and responsible for reading stuff from this queue. Now, normally, if you build your Azure applications without doing shared hosting, this would also map to a worker role, or a web role in this case. So, no, but the queue, of course, does have to... Oh, sorry. So the question is, do you care if you put the messages on the queue or if somebody's reading it? Well, from the sending point, no. But from the receiving end, obviously, you do. And the receiving end in nService Bus is responsible for creating the queues. So if there hasn't been a receiving endpoint, you can't send messages on that particular queue. So it will...
So it don't fill up?
Well, I mean, in Azure, the queue size, I'm not entirely sure, it's about lots of gigabytes. Yeah. So, but they might fill up, right? So in that regard, it does matter. You can set a lifetime on your messages to determine how long do they live and they can expire after a certain period of time. But please feel free to grab a book. So that's what's happening here. I'm telling now this message to go to the delivery worker endpoint. Now, fortunately, I've already created a delivery worker endpoint, which in this case is just a regular web role. So let's look at, okay, how would you build one of these web roles? Because right now, my website is done. It will send the order to the web role. So let's look at that. Let me just close down. Demo code, where were we? Okay, so let's set up the web role. That's this bit. Okay. So in a web role, in a work role, sorry, you typically get a class like this. And it, from the template, it's not empty, but... basically, you just get a role entry point, and that's it. Your application starts. Now do your thing. That's where we end up with. Now, what we want to do in this case, and I needed to put the code in the class. What you want to do is, in this case, trigger an nService Bus role entry point, and just say start to nService Bus. So this is all that you need to do to start nService Bus. Well, that's handy. It's already in a worker role. It knows what its purpose is. Just start it. But of course, you need a little bit of configuration to tell it, well, where do you find your information? What are you actually supposed to do here? And you can do that by giving it an endpoint config class. Now again, nService Bus will just scan your assemblies and find anything that implements I configure this endpoint, and it will configure the endpoint, aptly name interface. And we'll do the same things here, right? We'll tell it, we'll use the default builder, use TraceLogger, and just for fun and games, let's clear the startup queues. I'm also telling it explicitly, you are a worker. Now, this is your most common thing that you do in Azure when you're building a work. You say, as a worker, but you can also specify as a timeout and just as a listener. So there are some ways, but as a worker is typically what you would use. And you'll also tell it, well, what kind of transport channel are we using? It's a good idea to use the same transport channel as your sender. It's just a... And then I want custom initialization. That basically means call this method. Okay, so now we've told it to set this up. Now one thing I will need to do is configure end service bus. And this is pretty much the same configuration sections as I had in the other piece of code. So I can quickly walk through this. What are we saying here? Well, if something goes wrong, and it goes wrong for more than five times, because this is the first level retry, it will retry five times, and obviously you can configure those the five, put the messages on an error queue. Yes, please. So the question is, do I have to tell which endpoint to listen to? No, because by default, it will look at the name of the assembly that it's running in and use that as the name for the endpoint. So in this case, my assembly or my work role is called techbar.delivery.worker, and that's the name of my endpoint. So that's why I'm saying, well, you can send messages to a worker, so to speak. And this really directly maps to a queue as well. But one of the things which End Service Bus really likes to do is use a centralized error handling queue. So that's what's happening here. You can configure auditing if you want to. We'll look at sagas and the other things in a minute. Okay. So what else do we have here? Now I have the order handler. Because in the worker role, I want to handle the orders, obviously. So let's do that. Let's create a new class that will handle the order for me. So how do you start listening for messages? Well, you don't have to specify any connection strings. You don't have to open up the queues or anything. The only thing that you'll have to do is create a class that implements IHandleMessages of the type of message. And End Service Bus will then figure out, okay, well, you are apparently listening for messages of this type. You can have multiple message types that go to a specific endpoint, so that's no problem. And then from that point on, it will call this method, handle. And what are we doing here? Well, right now, I'm just saving this message into the database, nothing else. Right? It's just an entity framework, save the message into the database. And should this fail for some reason, because my database is offline for a very short period of time, or there was a deadlock, or whatever reason, it will retry immediately and retry immediately five times. And I can specify, if I want to, a second level retry policy here, which will basically say, after an X period of time, start retry that whole five time cycle again. And then maybe, you know, first 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you can specify your backup increments.
Does this also apply to the Azure queues which are underlying the service bus? I mean, if it's not available, if it has a transient failure or something, does it retry, or are you getting an exception?
Very good question. There's also a book for you. So basically what it will do is it will retry. Normally, so MSM, it was originally built against MSMQ, and MSMQ is transactional, so you could send a message on a queue within the same transaction as writing to the database. Well, in Azure, you don't have the distributed transaction coordinator, and the queues aren't transactional. So there's kind of an issue there. So you can choose two approaches. You can say either send the message on the queue and retry, or and retry if it fails, and retry a couple times, and then fail my entire transaction, so to speak. Or you can say, no, I want my transaction to complete. You know, try it a couple times, and then, you know, continue anyway, and just raise a message into the log saying, hey, this particular thing failed. But you have this issue here, right? Because it's not transactional. Yes. If I understand your question correctly, you're saying, can I, if something goes wrong, can I put it on the queue again? Is that what you're asking? So, and Service Bus will do that, will keep it on the queue until it's finished processing it. And that's actually what Azure does as well. I mean, if you get a message from a queue, it will keep it on the queue until it's done processing. Another thing which is really handy, and that kind of relates to your question as well, if you're using second level retries, it will take it off of the queue, put it on a separate retry queue, and then after a backoff period, put it back on the queue for you and retry again. So that's basically the second level retries that you have there. And it's a nice feature. Now that we're talking about these retries anyway. Oh, yes, please.
You say you have the queue is the same as the assembly name.
Yes.
But if I have a second process, for example, inventory, that wants to handle the same message. So the message goes into the place of order and into the inventory.
So I answer that in probably 10 minutes, because we're going into that. But it's a good question, so please feel free to grab a book at the end as well. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. With regards to message second-level retries, I think. So when you're sending a message to to an endpoint, you can send multiple message types to the same endpoint. And it will just, you know, as long as you have handlers within that endpoint to handle that message, nothing's wrong. However, one of the things which you have to take care of, and this is one of the reasons why and Service Bus recommends you to create many different endpoints, is your configuration for retries, for auditing, for error logging. All those configuration settings are set per endpoint, not per message type. So just to be clear, if this endpoint would handle both the place order command and the pay command and the, you know, all kinds of different commands, but for place order I want to have a different retry mechanism than for the delivering my order, it would be better to create multiple endpoints. And this is actually one of the reasons why the shared hosting is a really handy functionality, because if you don't use shared hosting, each endpoint would relate to a worker role in Azure. And you know, if you want to comply with the SLA for Azure, you should have two instances of your worker role running. So imagine for this application, if I wasn't using shared hosting and I wanted to use each message on a different worker role, I would probably have to have seven worker roles. Which is a lot of work, and then 7 times 2 instances, so you know 14 instances. Now, even with small instances, that's a lot of money for a simple application. So shared hosting can really help you there. Okay, but let's go back to the example here. I've now saved the order in a database, and if I started this up, I could, but for time purposes, I'm not going to right now. But it will save the order in the database, and if we have time, we can. Start adding exception messages and seeing the retries actually in action. But we're not doing anything yet, right? We're not scheduling anything. So there's actually two things I would like to do at this point in time. I would start preparing the order. That would be nice for customers if we actually prepared the order. And you know, it's also nice to get feedback back to the client for orders. So how would you do that? Well, I would like to say that in this case, this is more my delivery part of the system, and I also have a kitchen part of the system, which I kind of like to have separate responsibilities. So I would like to send a message to the kitchen to say, start preparing this order, but I also want to send a message back into the client saying, hey, the backend has received it. Now, you could do that by sending two messages, but I hope this will answer your question. Let's raise an event in this particular case. Now, what does an event look like? And I'm going to talk a little bit about that here. Let's raise this event, the order placed event. Now, in End Service Bus, it's customary that events are named in past tense. So something that has already happened, right? The order has been placed. Some people like to say, I order placed event. Some people say, no, that's too technical. You should only name it for the event that has occurred. So this is different from place order. Place order is an action, a to-do item. This is something has happened. Now, why is this an interface? Well, there's a couple reasons why this is an interface. One is, for sending a message, place an order, you might want to have some validation lodging on top of that order. And many clients could actually send a message to say, place this particular order. So you can have all these validation attributes on top of it. You can have rules, logic in that class. When you raise an event, it is that something has happened. Now, there's no way to invalidate something that has actually happened in the past, because this order has been placed, whether you like it or not. And you know, the kitchen might send a message back saying, hey, I'm out of ice, so I can't make this order. But that doesn't negate the fact that this order has been placed. So there is no reason to put logic in here. And one thing that's really handy if you use interfaces only is that you can do stuff with multiple inheritance for these things, because you know, you can inherit from multiple interfaces. It makes versioning of messages a lot easier. And there's some other tiny rules for reasons why you want to do this, but these are the main reasons why you want to have events as interfaces. But now I've created an interface. Now, how do you actually send a message that, or raise an event that has this interface? Well, and Service Bus has something for that. And let me just copy and paste in this particular code. And we'll have to do that now. It's not handy to call everything class one, because then I get a little bit confused, but in my demo, there's already files on the file system that have the same names. Handy. So we're going to do the publish order. Now, when are we going to do this? Well, it doesn't really matter, before or after. Message here. Okay. So what happens here? We're saying publish the place order event. And I say to the bus, publish something of this interface. And Service Bus in this case will create a dynamic instance of this. So I don't even have to create a class that really implements this. And Service Bus will create that on the fly for me. And then I can specify all the properties that I'm setting here. So why am I raising an event and not sending a message? Well, the nice thing about events, this is the same if you were just building a regular application in .NET and you raise an event from code, is you can have multiple subscribers to this event. So that's handy, because now I can say the website subscribes to this event to say, hey, the order has been received. Let's update that, and let's do that in a second. And we can also have the kitchen listening for this event. Hey, a new order has been placed. Let's start doing something. Now, one of the things which is really important when it comes to this is, obviously, I need my endpoint mappings. So let's go to the Service Bus endpoint mappings class here. And you will see, and this is a difference also with regards to messages, sending commands, is that, again, my endpoint is the worker role. Okay, so I'm sending a message to a worker role as a command, but an event, and that's an important distinction, is raised from an endpoint, right? Because multiple listeners can listen to an event, and they will have to know, okay, what endpoint am I going to listen to for these events? So while commands can be sent from multiple endpoints to a single endpoint, events can be broadcast from a single endpoint to multiple endpoints. That's the big distinction here. Okay, yes. Okay. So the question is, are events accumulated, and if the worker role that's listening to it is down, will it receive the event or not? The answer is yes. So it will. There is actually, if you're using Azure storage queues, it will have a separate store where it knows, okay, well, these things are subscribed to, these endpoints are subscribed to these messages, and when you send an event, and Service Bus will then put messages on the individual queues that are listening to it. If you're using Azure storage queues, it doesn't really have to, Azure Service Bus queues, it doesn't have to do that, because it can use topics for that. So it will use the underlying platform as much as it can, but Azure service queues, Azure storage queues, those names are a bit confusing. They don't support publish subscribe, but End Service Bus does. Yes. No, because you send a command to one endpoint. So you route it to a particular endpoint. Within that endpoint, you can have multiple handlers for a particular message, but it's only within one endpoint. Now, if you wanted to have one command that might go to multiple endpoints, you would need to set up your routing in such a way that they would not conflict and that, you know, one... That I would argue that you would actually have to have multiple messages in that case. And there was another question there?
Does End Service Bus provide a level of abstraction on top of all the queuing mechanisms? For example, if you use MSN queue normally, you can send 4 megabyte messages. But if you use End Service Bus, can you send larger messages?
So the question is actually twofold. Does End Service Bus do abstraction over your queues? Well, the answer is yes. Right now, the iBus doesn't care what kind of message. So if I wanted to rip out Azure Service Bus and put in MSMQ, you wouldn't see a difference in the code. It's just where you configure that. The second thing is with regards to message sizing. So your question is, what happens if I send a message that's larger? Well, End Service Bus has a data bus feature. So if you want to send a message that doesn't fit within the original message, it has a mechanism to send the additional payload out of band, so to speak. So that's really handy, especially in Azure, because in Azure you have Azure storage, which is pretty much, you know, unlimited amount of storage. So you could say, I have this 10 gigabyte file, I will send it, I will just put it in storage, send a message over the queue saying, hey, this message will arrive and the other endpoint, as soon as it started, finished uploading the file, the other endpoint will get a message saying, hey, it's there. I don't have that in the demo, but you can. It's there. Really nice. Oh, yes.
With respect to the calls and events, events are sent to multiple endpoints.
Yes.
And you said that if the client's not there, the message will be queued.
Yes.
How does it handle the, let's say, the out-of-order messages to that endpoint? Because the relation between the call and the event, if you send a call, they only get an event. Do they arrive in the same order?
No, and to be honest, I know that they have some functionality. So the question is, how do you handle out-of-order messages? I haven't looked into that much because I haven't needed it. I know that they have some functionality to look at ordering of messages, but especially when you're talking about retries and multiple instances that might handle those orders, I don't think that you'll have a nice way to say, well, you know, handle this one first, and only once this has been handled, handle the second one. Well, they might be stored on the same queue, but since you can have multiple listeners to those queues and you don't know which process, because right, if you scale up your worker roles, you have multiple worker role machines, you might still get multiple listeners or out of order handling of messages. Well, it is definitely a challenge. So what I've done now is I have said, well, I am publishing this event, but there's nobody listening for this event yet, right? Because I haven't done anything with regards to subscribing to this event. So this event would just go poof into void. And that's a shame for a perfectly nice event. So let's handle it. Let's do something with it. So right now in the website, in the delivery website, I am going to add a new message handler. And let's just do it in the hub. It doesn't really matter where I put it. So what am I doing here now? I am implementing a handler. Again, I handle messages of type I order placed. And what I'm saying here is that I'm calling SignalR to send a message back to the browser. Now, there is a challenge with SignalR in this case, because if you load balance this thing, you'll have to do some extra steps to make sure that these techniques would still work in a nice Azure load balance environment. You are absolutely right. Thank you very much. I put it in the wrong place. That would have caused some issues within the demo, I can be sure of. I mean, the kitchen does need to know, obviously, that it's been placed, but it doesn't need to. So, here we go. Right. I might have screwed up my demo here a little bit, because, you know, with ReSharper, you can always nice Alt-Enter and add references. And I think I now have added a reference from my one website to the other website. I wonder what that does. No, I didn't, actually, because the project file is still not checked out. So let's just hope that I didn't screw it up, because then let's just see. Okay, so if I start this up now, hopefully, what it should do is it should send a message from the website to the worker role. The worker role should save it in a database, then raise an event back to the website, and the website should send a message back to the browser saying it's handled. So hopefully this works. It compiles, that's a good thing. Better than not compiling. Now, one thing I found is that, you know, startup times are a little bit slow, and especially with regards to, you know, compiling on the fly, so to speak, it's not very, very fast. Once it's running, it's pretty good, but you'll see that some things could have been a little bit faster. So if I place an order now, just with one Techno Sunrise, it places it on a list. So hopefully what it will do is it will send a message over to SignalR, send it over to the worker role. Worker role will start processing it, send a message back to the browser, and it says order has been placed. Now, this took a little while to get here. Now, like I said, JIT compiling is an important reason why it took a little while, so the next time it will go faster. Another reason why it just took a little bit of time, and that has to do with Azure. In Azure, you pay for a couple things. You pay for the amount of storage that you're using, and you're paying for the number of times that you call towards Azure or get a response back. But anyway, you know, usually you do request reply. So every time that you have something polling Azure to say, are there new messages, you're paying for that. So by default, and Service Bus will not be very aggressive in polling. So it will not, you know, that's why if I do this thing again, if I place a new order, it's not instant that you get a response back, because it's on this cycle where it will just wait for a second before it will actually do this. Now, the nice thing is it will do batching. So with regards to sending, you know, scaling this up, doing a lot of messages, it's really good. If you need split second response times from your queues, maybe the Azure queues are not the best approach, or you should crank up the amount of times that it's polling, but then, you know, you start paying a lot more. So it's a choice. Anyway, so we see that the messages arrive in the browser, but yeah, it's not the customer who wants to know that this has happened. We want to have the server, the worker on the other end to know that this has happened. But note, I didn't have to do anything with regards to subscribing to this message, right? And Service Bus detects, hey, I have one endpoint here that subscribes to events. I have one endpoint here that publishes events. They might be related somehow. Let me set up a, you know, subscription for you automatically. You can do it manually if you don't want to, but and this is especially handy if you have some clients who are only sometimes interested and you have very often changing subscriptions. But in these situations where you just have different systems that are communicating this way, it's very handy to just have them automatically subscribe. Because you saw, I only had to say, I listen for this event, and boom, it gets there. So when it comes to actually preparing the drink on the other end, in the kitchen, one thing to note is that I could say, well, I received the order and the order has five drinks. Well, let's just prepare one, prepare the next one. Hey, it's done. And I send it back to you. However, for large orders, for large parties, that really doesn't scale very well because you might have, you know, 10 people in the kitchen doing nothing, and there's one person sweating away on that one particular order. No, you want to, each drink can be processed in parallel. But then again, we have the problem, okay, well, if we want to prepare each drink in parallel, how are we going to do it if one of the drinks fails, right? If there is an issue and somebody might retry or anything. So how would you do that? Well, that's kind of like a business process, right? I want to make sure that I synchronize all these processes together. And you can use a saga for that. Now, a saga in a service bus is really straightforward to implement. So let me just copy and paste this in and explain what it does. We'll implement this saga in the kitchen worker because that's actually where we want to start distributing these messages. So let me add the class and Alt-Enter a whole bunch of times. Just gotta love ReSharper. Who here uses ReSharper? A lot of people. It's the best. I really can't function anymore without it. It's just the navigate. I never know where a class is within my solution explorer because I just know what it's called and I just, you know, find it that way. It's anyway, it's now my crutch, so to speak. I can't walk without it anymore. So what is a saga? Well, a saga basically says I want to start a process that needs to be synchronized somehow. There's multiple messages involved that need to be synchronized and they're part of the same process. And it has a beginning and it has an end. And after it's done, I really don't care about the state of the process anymore that much. So in this case, it's the saga for processing a particular order, right? The process order saga. So what does it do? Well, it gets started by sending a message of type IOrderPlaced. In this case, that's an event. But this saga is listening for events that says, hey, a new order has been placed, and that starts a new saga. And it only ends when the entire order is finished, or you know, we could define different reasons why it would end, but in this case, that's what I've said. So now the question becomes, okay, how do you know that an order is there? Well, you can configure how to find sagas, and in this case, I'm using the order number as the identifier for my sagas. So and one thing I should explain is that sagas have data. Right? Sagas are the state of my particular workflow process. So in Service Bus, you create a class that you call, you know, you can either implement I contain saga data or you just can implement contain saga data. And these are the properties that you can that I've defined, okay, well, this is what I need to implement my business process. Right? What's the order number? For which table is it? Number of drinks. Right now, I'm only counting the number of drinks that have actually been prepared, which is, you know, a little bit cheating. But you know, you could also have a list of orders in here. This information gets stored right now because that's how I've set it up in Azure Table Storage, which is nice because it's just, you know, a huge place to store data. I could have also chosen the database, or by default, it will use RavenDB. But yeah, RavenDB on Azure is a little bit problematic because it's not out of the box. So, but you have to take care that if you're using Azure Storage for this, it doesn't do well with serializing complex message types. So, you know, simple things like integers, strings, those kind of things are simple. If you want to have lists of things that you want to serialize in here, well, you would be better off storing that in a database somewhere rather than directly in here, unless you're using a different storage technology for this. Okay, so this is my data, and it will create that for me. And then once the message comes in, right, the order has been placed, I need to obviously remember in my saga data, okay, well, this is the information about the order. And from that point on, I can start coordinating a process. So what I will do here is I will send several messages to some other endpoint, and we'll look at what endpoint that might be, to start preparing the drink. Right? So each drink could get picked up by a different worker in this case, or a different process, and prepared individually. So that's nice. I've now distributed the parallelized the processing work. Okay, but then obviously, right, we need to do something to make sure that this actually ends up on the other end. So okay, so I will need some more endpoint mappings in this case. And let me just add a bunch of them immediately. So service bus define routing. So I'm defining a whole bunch of messages or routing for messages, and they're already in the system. I didn't want you to go over the process of me copy and pasting in them. But I have a command that says prepare a drink, and then I have two events: one that says my drink is prepared, and the other event is the entire order is completed. Now you can imagine that I'm sending out a message to a different system that says, hey, this drink has been prepared. Prepare this drink. I could have just replied with a command that says drink has been prepared. And in that case, I wouldn't even have to do a mapping within my sagas to match them. Yes, please. I'm trying to explain that in this case, I'm raising an event. And the reason why I'm raising an event here is that I want to have multiple listeners to this. So I want to have the delivery website to listen to this event, to give status updates. Hey, one drink has been prepared, two drinks have been prepared, right? That's an interesting metric. But I also want the saga to know, hey, a drink has been prepared, so that I know when the entire order is complete. But what I could have done, and I didn't in this particular case, I could have sent a message, prepare this order, and that other endpoint could have replied with a message saying, hey, the order has been prepared, then you would probably have a message saying, prepare drink complete. And then from there, I could have raised an event saying, I order prepared or something. Right? In some cases, it's handier to raise an event to say, hey, this has been done. And in some cases, it's easier to just say, do this and come back. Do this and come back. So depends on your needs in this case. Yes, please. So the question is, can you change your routing and your sagas at runtime? I don't think so. I haven't seen any implementation or any way to do that, because this is typically done at startup. And most of the parts of the system need to know your routing schemes. Now, one of the things that you could do is, if it's just for auditing, you can have and service bus put a message on a different queue, and basically when you send one message, it will put it on two queues and process it that way. And you could say, well, I will raise an event and then have multiple parts of my system listen for the event. And if you don't care about the event, just ignore it based on runtime rules. But I don't really know any way to do runtime routing. Sorry. In this case, yes. It's not a workflow-based system like Windows Workflow Foundation, where you can upload just a new XAML file and it will do that for you. So yes, this is workflow in code. So you're as flexible as your code is, basically. One of the nice things about to quickly get back to the saga again, and which class one is it? It's this class one. It will synchronize this, because you can imagine that if I have two, I'm sending out multiple prepare drink messages, and they might be prepared at the same time, and at the same time reply, hey, my drink is done. And one thing that you don't want to have happened is they both report that they're done, and you get concurrency issues and it doesn't get reported back. So the nice thing about these sagas is it uses optimistic concurrency to make sure that one particular saga is not running at the same time, even though it might be running on multiple machines. So it might this event might be raised twice at some point in time, right? At exactly the same point in time, it might point to the same saga, but using optimistic concurrency, it will make sure that only one of these methods is running at the same time. So that's a nice feature for coordinating business processes, especially in Azure, where you're likely scaling this up across multiple machines. So what's happening here? I'm sending out a prepare drink message. This goes all the way up to my delivery website in this case, and in the delivery website, sorry, no, in the kitchen website, obviously, because that's where you want to prepare the drink. All that I did here is have a prepare drink handler, and I already had it ready, but the prepare drink handler will just send a message to the browser saying, hey, prepare this drink, you can say it's done, and it will send it back. So let's see, what else is there interesting to tell you about this before I will actually start running it again? What else did I want to show? Oh, this is the script. I didn't want to go into the script, I wanted to go into the code. I have the drink prepared handler. So when a particular drink has been prepared, that's an event. I'm listening for that in the website, in the delivery website in this case. So let's add that one as well. And again, I don't need to configure this. It's all, you know, scanned automatically and found. And the order, if the order is completed, I also want to listen for that in the website. And in this case, all that I'm doing with these events that I'm listening for on the website is just send the message back to the browser saying the status has changed. I'm not doing anything special here, so it's not really interesting to go into this. But yeah, now from my saga, I should have the whole process complete. So in my saga, I'm saying I'm sending a message over to the kitchen website. The kitchen website, when it's done, will raise an event saying the drink is prepared. And when all my drinks have been prepared, that's kind of what I'm doing here, I want to say, okay, well, in this case, the order is complete. I will raise an event that the order has been completed, and I'm closing down the saga. So this removes the saga from storage. So saga is not really the place to store, you know, business information that you might want to analyze at a later point in time, right? Your database should do that for you. And this is just for synchronizing processes. There is one point that I would like to show you a little bit before I run it. Oh, who would have guessed that I would have had to plug it in? So I'll just keep talking because I only have 6 minutes left.
Yes.
Yes. Good question. So the question is, how do N-Service Bus and Azure Service Bus relate? From my perspective, Azure Service Bus, just as Azure Storage Queues, are a transport channel. So Azure Service Bus has a little bit more bells and whistles to it, but it's still not that much more than a transport channel. You can put N-Service Bus on top of that as a productivity suite that will do all these nice things that I just explained to you. But it's especially the naming that's a bit odd, right? I mean, you're using N-Service Bus or Azure Service Bus. Which one are you using? Well, both. Okay. So I should actually be in a position where I can run this now. Oh, there are build errors. This is nice. You didn't see that. This was just Visual Studio backstabbing me. Doesn't happen to me that often, but sometimes it just gives me this version error. And then restarting, and it's gone. Resharper tips. Anyone in for a resharper tip? No? Okay. So I'm going to start this up now. Now, we only have 5 minutes left, so I won't demo the exception handling that much. I mean, it's always fun in these cases to have different places where you put these random exceptions, right? An exception that only occurs, you know, 50% of the times, and then just try it out a couple times and see that the whole process still works. So, but anyway, let me just put these two side by side, and if all goes well, I should be able to create an order. Put a hangover cure, we'll need it, and also some separation of concerns. So I've placed the order, and with a little bit of patience, because it's JIT compiling, thinking about it, thinking a little bit more about it. Okay, placed the order now. Now, hopefully, it should figure out, okay, well, we'll send the order to the back end. If not, there's things on my error queue now. And I'll have to look in Visual Studio to see, did I do anything wrong here? Yes, I did something wrong, apparently. What did we do wrong? Let's stop it. Now, normally, again, if I'm doing something wrong and I start up the process again, everything still works. But it will reprocess my message. But obviously, I did purge on startup, so then it doesn't. What is it saying? No handlers could be found for a message type I order placed. That's interesting, because I'm pretty sure that we did that. Well, just out of reasons for time, I hope you believe me that this morning I had it working. But we only have 3 minutes, and I would love to figure out what goes on. But it normally you would have seen the messages going across, and you could complete the orders and those kind of things. But are there any questions with regards to this? Yes, please.
Can you speed up the initialization process?
Well, the regular techniques. Oh, sorry. Can you speed up the initialization process? Not that much more than the regular techniques that I know of. Then, you know, engineering the code, pre-compiling it. You could
sending a demo message across the system, sending a test message.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, you can. One of the things which is really nice that you can schedule things as well within N Service Bus. So you can say it's now every 5 minutes send out this. So send out a ping, or every 5 minutes do this. So to keep the system awake, and you can also do that on startup. You can have custom startup logic, several points that you can start things up. But the actual cold startup time, because it scans assemblies, you can point it only scan this assembly, right? That will save you some time. But still, I mean, the flexibility comes at a little bit of cost. But not that much once it's running.
How do you upgrade a live system that's already sending messages across? Do you have to bring the whole thing down?
So the question is, how do you upgrade a live system without bringing the system down? You'll have to think about versioning your messages closely, right? And Service Bus knows about message versioning. So if you keep the same DLO version, but you make sure that your messages are backwards compatible, that's no issue. If you introduce a new message type, only handlers that are compiled against the new message type, and I think it's major version that is looking for, will handle those messages. So you can say, I will have, on the same queue, I will have messages of version 1 and messages of version 2, and I will just install maybe on even the second version side by side, have them running, and as soon as there are no more older messages, take the other one offline. So yes, you can. Are there any other questions? There's a question in the back. Yes, you can have. Sorry, the question is: can you have multiple steps in your saga? Yes, you can. This was just a relatively simple example, but just implement many I handle messages of type, and then it will handle multiple messages.
Do they all need to be different messages?
So the question is: do they have to be different messages? If you have the same message contract, you only need to say implement I handle messages once. And your business logic will determine when the saga ends and also how to find the saga. So if you remember in the saga, I did this, configure how to find the saga instance. This is how you would say, well, based on this key, I'm finding my particular saga instance. And I am actually listening for multiple I drink prepared events because that's what is happening. So the question is, can you do rollbacks? Within handling a single message, it will be in a transaction scope. I haven't seen, to be honest, any way to say, well, this message has arrived, roll back the arrival of this message. So the transaction ends as soon as the transaction ends. So. As soon as your message handling is complete. So if a new message arrives and you say, well, this message kind of negates the previous message, you'll have to build that logic yourself. So that, if that was your question, anyway.
Well, I can imagine that you could use a sidecar for send place in place in order, contact supplier, get stuff from stock, then ship it to the customer, and then when somewhere in the beginning charge customer. I can imagine that if there's something fails down with get stuff from stock, that you then do a compensating action for the charge to the customer.
So the question is, in this case, can you do more compensating transactions with that? So yes, that's actually one of the things which sagas are really good at. I mean, you'll have to build the logic yourself, but it really makes sense to do compensating transactions there, because that is your business process. One of the things which I really like is also doing timeouts. So one of the places where I'm using it is for a booking engine for a hotel chain. So if you place a booking, you put it on a queue, and then you're waiting for the payments to come in. Well, if the payment hasn't arrived within an X number of period, you will need to do something, right? It might be that the payment is just delayed. It might be that something else is going on. But after an X period of time, you'll need to do something. And you can very easily schedule timeouts within your sagas as well. So that's a really nice feature. Any other questions?
Can you please take questions outside of
I will. And our time is up. So thank you very much for your attendee and for being here so early.